Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga und läuft dann in Keeper Freisel rein. Iredale vollendet, 4:0.
Beste. Ball kommt in die Mitte und zu Kleindienst! Kleindienst!
Goethe. Linke Seite ist blank, vielleicht. Ja, vielleicht! Vielleicht zieht er ihn in Salazar.
Welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all of the action from match day 30. Not long now until the season concludes, and let me tell you, this weekend was a spectacular weekend of drama, action, goals, and so much more. An important match for a lot of teams at both ends of the table, and there is so much to cover on this week's edition. We're going to start at the Volksparkstadion on Saturday night, the top game between Hamburger SV and Holstein Kiel. 57,000 made their way to a bloody cold affair. It was physical, lots of ticky-tacky fouls, a really good atmosphere, but a game that once again followed the trend that has often plagued Hart SV, which is not being able to beat Holstein Kiel. 1-0 your final score. Tom Rauter, who is a first half substitute, due to the injury from Finn Porat, who left the game with a thigh injury. Really don't know why HSV fans were booing him. I know he's an ex academy player, and look, there were definitely some mind games being played by Kiel, on many occasions. Just like, any touch, they would seem to go down, and I could understand how that would be frustrating. But they were playing the mental mind games against HSV, and it was quite fascinating because before the game, you knew that the sort of the permutations that surrounded it. Fortuna winning, which we'll talk about at the end of Group One, they had to win this game. They've really struggled. Look, they took some confidence coming from two goals behind with 10 men to get a point in Magdeburg. But this was just a really frustrating affair if you were a Hamburg fan. They could have played another 180 minutes, and I'm convinced they weren't going to score. Very one-dimensional, just tons of crosses into the box. And you have to remember, they played the last 25-plus stoppages with the man advantage when Holtby was given a second yellow within the space of about a couple of minutes of each other, which, initially Sascha Stegemann, who was the referee, had quite a long leash in terms of, like, he was calling a lot of fouls, but he was being, I would say, very generous at times. There were some fouls that you could argue could have warranted a yellow card. But then he just kind of fired Holtby very quickly. And it was just mind-numbing to watch HSV in that last 25 minutes where they're just going forward and they weren't really doing anything. I almost felt Kiel were going to score a second on the break. Then Hamburg getting the equaliser. And it was quite interesting in the post-match press conference. Baumgart, to paraphrase, said that there was a definite foul on Mattia Raab for the goal. Now, I was right next to that incident, that scene. So I was towards the away end on the left, on that, so where the corner was coming from. So from the broadcast side, I was on the near post. There was no foul. There just wasn't. And it was ludicrous that Baumgart would insinuate that. I know they looked at it. There was a couple of instances where VAR was involved. There was a thought of a handball. It would have been tough to give from where I was. I couldn't see anything. And look, the few weeks that I've been here and finally experiencing the VAR thing, it's so bad. Like, the screen with the whistle and like, just come on, just show the incident on the screen. At least let us see what the referee is seeing at this moment in time. Because you have absolutely no clue what's going on. There's like stoppages that are 2-3 minutes where just people are standing around not sure what's going on. And then you have like five players that are not encroaching out of play, hawking the referee, and it's so bad. Like, you know, VAR has it can be a really helpful tool, but stadium experience needs to be so much better. So much better. Anyway, sorry, little rant. But this is the thing with Hamburg. We said it at the start of the season. This is last dance territory for this team. And mentally, this team looks finished. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are a ton of players who leave at the end of the season to seek a new challenge, to do something different. The other question is what you do with Jonas Bolt. Hamburg have easily the biggest transfer budget of any team in the league. And they could cherry pick who they wish from the division. But just the squandering of resources. I know that like Bolt himself was sort of seen as this this genius of you know, for the stuff he'd done at Leverkusen, and that's fine. That's totally understandable. But he hasn't accomplished anything in Hamburg. They've made the playoffs twice, and in both occasions, you know, I think the Hertha one was the one they should have won, to be honest. And really all it did was prolong the inevitable for Hertha. But the Stuttgart one, they had no chance. Stuttgart just significantly a better team at the moment. And even in that moment in time, they were too. So I would suspect, I don't know this information, this is just speculation, but my feeling is he won't be there in the summer. And I think if Hamburg need a full reset, and that includes at sporting director, I think they need to do something different. But it just, Kiel were the second team that I'd seen win away from home. And man, the whistles in the stadium post-game, wow. And that was from a fan base that have had enough. Like, this cannot go on. And then you have to look at, like, did they wait too long to sack Volta? Why would you sack him four games into the Rückrunde? If you were going to do it, why wouldn't you do it during the winter break? Like, where it makes the most sense to make a coaching change. Where the manager can actually make, the new manager can have 3 to 4 weeks to work with the team and maybe make some influence on the transfer decisions. But yeah, it was bizarre. It's been a bizarre season. Look, they're still probably going to finish fourth, which is the lowest in the six seasons, they haven't finished lower than fourth. Which is incredible. So now they've got some really interesting fixtures coming up. Braunschweig, who, you know, are going to be tricky. Then it's St. Pauli, and St. Pauli could go up. They could gain promotion if things are the way they are at the moment. And that would be disaster to let little brother gain promotion in your own stadium. With a third of the resources. Paderborn and Nuremberg end it, so the Pauli game and the Nuremberg game will be World Feed games. But I suspect they might change that last game, the Hamburg game, purely off the basis is there's a good chance that neither team will have anything to play for, and you'd rather them either go to Wiesbaden or you'd rather them go and see Düsseldorf, because we know Kiel are going to be shown on the final match day. So I guess the last thing on this one is Kiel defended. They were so good defensively. Granted, it was relatively easy, where it was just Hamburg were just doing the same thing. They would just whip a ball into the box and hope someone will get onto it. I don't know what their game plan was. Especially I've never seen a team panic so much, but. Credit to Kiel, they defended. They were so good defensively in this game. It was impressive, and a good reason as to why they are in the position that they are. You know, with their backs against the wall in this game, They were superb. Four games to go for Kiel, starting with Kaiserslautern, Wiesbaden. The big one is against Dusseldorf, and they might have already gained promotion by the time they play Fortuna. If things continue the way they are, they've won six on the bounce. They look unstoppable at the moment, and it's the variety of the way they've done it. Like there was a great sense in the press conference of how pleased Marcel Rapp was, and post game, you know, like against most teams, you would sort of the celebrations are a bit subdued, but they immediately leapt off the bench and straight to the away support, and it was brilliant. It was great to watch. It was a really cool experience, and yeah, fantastic win for Kiel, and yeah, it looks good for them. It looks very, very good for them. The other game that I was at, which was also a top game, Hanover against St. Pauli, 49,000 at the Heinz von Harden Arena. It was cold. See, as an Australian, I'm not built for this weather. Personally, I'm not built for this weather. It was funny, St. Pauli's press officer was like, but it's plus 10 degrees. I'm like, it's not. It's 8. It's cold. And anyway, this was a huge game because St. Pauli entered on the back of two consecutive defeats. And Hanover, much like Haasvau, had to win to really keep their hopes of the playoff. And Hanover was so good in the first half. I was really impressed with their attention to detail off the ball. They pressed fantastically. And St. Pauli, who were missing Eric Smith, who's usually their main facilitator in building up the ball, so they had David Nemeth in that back three with Hal Kvaal and Carol Metz. It was so impressive. And look, St. Pauli had to switch the magnets around, we saw, because of the injury to Philip True. Metcalf played as that sort of left midfield, left wing back. So he had to, normally he would play in an attacking three. They had Hartle playing in his role, and Kemline and Irvine were central in midfield. But Hanover's first half an hour was really good. They pressed fantastically, and you saw St. Pauli a little bit rattled, and a lot of conversations, especially between Nemeth and Vasile, and even Irvine was getting in on the mix, and you could sense there was a bit of frustration creeping in. But all that frustration went away when St. Pauli opened the scoring 4 minutes before the break. They made some adjustments after half hour and how they were building up the play. They were a little bit more direct. They looked to, instead of go short, a little bit more of the medium to long balls to bypass the press. And look, they were able to get out the back, and Connor Metcalf puts in a fantastic ball in, and Dapo Afolayan says, thank you very much. Goal number 7 for Afolayan, who I thought was very lively. There was a lot of interplay between him and referee Dennis Eitkin. There was a lot of contact on some of the fouls that weren't given. But, you know, Eitkin he was quite lenient, I would say. And he let a lot of things go. I think he wanted the game to flow in the way he was officiating it. But yeah, the offline goal, very good. Hanover, to their credit, responded very quickly, and they get their goal through Lars Gindorf, who gets his first goal. It was a bit of a scrap fest in the box, and he was the first to respond. And it was going to be a big goal, because it was going to be a good test of how both teams approached the second half. And speaking to Connor Metcalf after the game, you know, they reset. He talked about how he just, you know, just trust what you're doing. It'll pay off. And look, they were, you know, it was a much better second half from St. Pauli. I thought they were, especially the first 15, 20 minutes, they looked really in control. And look, they weren't doing much in terms of testing Ron Robert Zieler. But what they were doing was just wrestling control of the game. And they got rewarded. And, you know, one of the things that's really impressed me this season has been their set piece work and their set piece design. And the goal from Johannes Eggestein, which is his 9th of the season, was a great case of set piece design. And it reminded me of sort of what you would see in basketball, where you sort of had the screeners, and much like if you're trying to get Steph Curry open for an open three, you've got those the off-ball screeners creating the path, wheeling around the three-point line and then shooting the J. Eggestein was able to do that. He lost his defender through all the chaos, and Zeller should be really upset that he didn't parry it, because it went straight to him, but he parried it to the top of the roof of the net, and for 2-1. Hanover, look, they pushed a lot to get the equalizer. Nikola Vasiliev, who had a fantastic game, had some really good saves. He had a big one down the stretch to deny Hanover. And look, 2-1 is your final. Hanover, it's a tough one. Speaking to Say Maroya at the end of the game, which was cool. Thank you to Hanover, who were very kind of to give us access, because initially the plan was to just do the game for BN, do some social media work. And then as I sort of was being shown around the stadium, which, by the way, the Heinz von Harden Arena is probably the closest I've seen to like an Aussie rules stadium in the stadiums that I've been to, in a sense of like it's more of an oval shape. And it was really cool. Like, I thought it was a great stadium, a really nice stadium to go to. But yeah, Maroya cut a pretty devastated figure, because they put in a lot of work in this game, and for the most part, I thought they were really good, Hanover, and perhaps a little bit unlucky not to get a result. But it's look for Hanover, this is the 3-year plan. This is year two. They are better than what they were last season. Maybe the game's different if Harvard Nielsen's available. You know, who knows? But Maroya played a really good game, and his matchup with Metcalf was super entertaining, because they were both going back and forth, and it was a great test for Metcalf. But Maroya basically said, to paraphrase, was, you know, they have to play with that level of intensity every game, not when it fits. And he was 100% right, because when they played with that high energy, that high intensity, yes, they didn't score a goal in that first half hour, but they really crippled St. Pauli into, you know, a lot of mistakes. And it's very difficult in this day and age to not make the most of your dominance in such a period. And it was the lack of the being able to sustain that, because they didn't play with the same energy out of the break. That really hurt them. And I felt really sorry for him at the end of the game, because I can imagine the last thing he would want to do was talk to media, which is totally understandable. My heart felt for him, because he was one of the few that was really consistent in terms of the energy and the intensity and getting forward. And you know, I really liked his game, but yeah, it's a shame. They knew coming into this game they had to win it. So now I guess Hanover are in a position where they've got to look to next season. What does the squad look like? And obviously next season is the big one for them. It's the target year, is to go up in this 3-year plan. So we'll see what happens. But I was actually quite pleasantly happy that Hanover really produced a strong game. They just the lack of, I think the lack of diversity in the final third, at times they seemed a little bit too predictable. But their off the ball stuff and the way they defended for the most part was really good. I don't think St. Pauli had a pretty difficult time. The 7 shots on goal for the entirety of the game does dictate that they did defend quite well. Just the key moments they were let down, and it was crosses into the box that proved the difference. So for Hanover, they've got Hertha on Friday night. So here's where now they're playing for pride, and this is where Lytle might choose to experiment. He might not, but he will look towards, finding out which of the pieces he can take in the next season and working towards being better. And they can compete with the best teams. Like seeing it firsthand, they can definitely do it. But are they going to be able to sustain that for an entire season? We'll see. For St. Pauli, look, massive win with Kiel winning the night before. It's also stuff we're going to talk about next. They had to win this game as well. You don't want to enter the final stage of the season with a losing streak, on a losing streak. And, you know, being rocked by Elversberg, losing to Karlsruhe. But speaking, like, on the Thursday, we had a chat with Jackson and Connor. And the impression I got was that there was no panic whatsoever. They were very relaxed. They knew this was a big game. They were taking it one game at a time. Very, you know, all the stock standard stuff. But there was definitely a quiet confidence that they would do. There were a lot of good things that they were doing. It was just a case of whether or not they can fix it. And they did, for the most part. They've got Rostock next, which on Friday night, which is a massive game. Then Hamburg and Osnabrück and then Wiesbaden. So lots to look forward to for St. Pauli. Lastly, in Group 1, we've teased it. Let's talk about Düsseldorf. They played Fürth. Of course, Fürth won last week, beating Kaiserslautern. This game was controversial in a way. So I think it was about 15 minutes into the first half. There was a big decision. Now, to me, when the ball hit Tim Oberdorf with his arms away from his body, it looked like a penalty to me. And initially given as a penalty by referee Florian Heft, who saw it the same way. However, after some VAR intervention, it was taken away. Now, we've seen those given all season. Those types of, like, and I look, Alexander Zorniger, who is nicknamed Angry for a reason, was incandescent on the touchline. Like, extraordinarily frustrated, and you could understand why. Because the consistency and you want continuity in the way the game is officiated, just, yeah, very confusing. I was very confused with the decision. But, like, Fürth, to their credit, like, they had a lot of control of the ball. And, look, they tested Florian Carstenmeyer to an extent. They seemed to have, like, a lot of ball with not a lot of substance at times. But when they did get forward, you know, there was some intensity going on there. But this was a classic Thuram game in the sense that he was very patient, saw what the opponent was doing, reacted, which is the style he runs. He's a very reactive coach. And look, the patience paid off. Shinta Appelkamp found Vincent Vermey, and that was your game. A 1-0 win for Fortuna. Now, we now know with four games to go in the season, Fortuna are on 55 points. Six consecutive wins, same with Kiel. 6 points clear of Haasvall. And we're comfortable now saying that the top three is the top three. Like, we can say that. We were unsure last week, but with results that are panning out the way they have, the top three will be the top three. In what order the top three will be, who knows? Because they are 5 points adrift of St. Pauli. But it's a, like, I think it will be tough for Fortuna. I think the top three will be as is, maybe just Pauli and Kiel fighting over top spot. But, you know, Düsseldorf just had to do what they did. They held on for a lot. They were under a lot of pressure. It was quite an impressive, like, Fürth definitely took the confidence from last week's win, and they certainly seemed a little bit more comfortable on the ball. They looked to really put Düsseldorf on the back foot. But ultimately, you know, it doesn't mean much when you can't score goals. That's it. And, you know, Fortuna, who have been one of the best goal-scoring teams in the division, 64 goals this season, which is number one, it's hard to beat. You know, it's hard to beat teams that that score so many goals, and they defend really well. I thought Kastemeyer was quite good in this game. You know, throughout the years of doing the podcast, the one thing I've always talked about is he always looks quite shaky when teams shoot from range. But no, he looked pretty. He commanded the area. Excuse me. And it looks good for Fortuna. Now, as a question of who do they want to play in the playoff? So if we believe that as is Fortuna, we think Fortuna will finish third, right? Who do they want to play? Well, at the moment, it's Bochum. Now, to me, that's the team I'd want to play at the moment. I mean, obviously, you'd like to play Köln as well because Köln, but I think they're going to get relegated. Darmstadt, who beat them on the weekend. Also, I think at the end of this weekend, they'll be relegated, we think. Unless they win and Bochum loses. Mainz loses, but Mainz are picking up points. So it's either going to be Bochum or Mainz. I think that will be, it'll be one of those two teams unless Union Berlin falls off or continues to fall off because they are only 2 points ahead. There's so much to play for. It's really exciting how the playoff picture looks at that end. So I wonder, I'm really interested to see. I don't think Düsseldorf will care who they play, but I would say they would much rather play Bochum at this stage. Because I thought they were okay against Wolfsburg, Bochum, but yeah, I think they're the most beatable team at the moment. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but yeah. So Fortuna's run home is quite difficult. I mean, they've got Schalke away, top game, world feed. And Schalke are a different animal at home. Nuremberg will be a game they should be able to win. Then they've got Kiel. So they can have the Kiel game, which should, in theory, secure the playoff. And they've got Magdeburg to end the season before the playoff games. Now, this is a whole hypothetical, but it looks likely. For Fürth, you know, they're not going to go down. They're not going to go up. So they got Wiesbaden, Braunschweig, Magdeburg, and then at home to Schalke to end the season. Yeah, look, they've had a tough Rückrunde, but they're still in the hunt. Let's see what happens from here. We'll take our first break, and on the other side, we'll discuss the 3 6-pointer games in that relegation battle, starting with an Ostduell, Hansa Rostock against Magdeburg. Magdeburg and Hansa Rostock are two teams that are desperate to get back to winning ways. Hansa were destroyed 4-0 in the capital by Hertha, whereas Magdeburg threw away a 2-goal lead with the man advantage to draw with HSV. A game that required no extra attention because this had all the makings of an Ostduell. 27,500, which, if memory serves me right, might be the biggest attendance they've had all season at the Ostseestadion. Really a tale of two halves. Magdeburg took the ascendancy early. They opened the scoring on 18 minutes after a misplaced pass by John Patrick Strauss, who was making his first start since November. Lucas Schiller picked it up, rounded Damian Rosbach, and then a very cool finish past Marcus Kolke. Schiller thought he had a second midway through the first half. But he was offside when Teixeira played the ball to him. So no goal. But they would get a second goal just before the break. Excuse me. That breakfast is getting through me. Free kick. Barisatic with a sensational ball in. And Daniel Haber getting his first goal of the season. Rostock did press in the second half. They had several good opportunities. But overall, pretty lackluster in the final third. Not enough quality to really test Dominik Reimann in the Magdeburg goal. And it's a massive game for Magdeburg. It puts them on 36 points at 12th position. They are 5 points clear of Hansa in the playoff spot and 6 points clear of Kaiserslautern, who we'll talk about next, being one of the two teams to win on a match day where at the time when Magdeburg were 13th heading into the match day, to be one of the two teams to win in the relegation grudge matches that were taking place on match day 30 is ginormous. And they needed the win too, because the last month and a bit has been a serious struggle for Magdeburg. They haven't really come out of the international break. Well, I mean, they haven't lost, I suppose. They have lost. They lost the first game coming out of the international break. And since then, they're unbeaten in their last three, but one win and two draws, which really should have been two wins. They should have beaten Hasfeld, but they threw that one away. It's important because with four games to go, they hold the cards. Destiny is in their hands. And now they're in a really good situation where they don't need much. You know, we usually say 38 is the target point, and with four games to go, so you've got 12 points up for grabs, you need 2 points, essentially. Could you foresee your Hansas, your Kaiserslauterns really picking up 6 points? I mean, we've seen it before, it's possible, but it seems rather unlikely. For Magdeburg, good positioning. They did the hard work early, and then they were able to hold on. They limited Hansa Rostock to 9 shots, which is good. Excuse me. Which is good. We'll see, though. It seems like it's going to be an interesting summer for them with personnel and what it looks like. I mean, Christian Tietz is going to be there still. We know that with a contract extension he had in the middle of the season. But yeah, it's a tough one. What direction they're going to go in next season? Should they survive? Look, their next two games against two teams in the relegation battle. You've got Osnabrück, who are close to done, I would say. They are close to done. And then they've got Kaiserslautern away on that Saturday night game, which will be massive. And they take points in those games. I would say they're safe, because the last two games are a bit trickier, but they've still got something to play for. For Rostock, yeah, another tough performance, because look, they were really, I don't think they were particularly good in Berlin last weekend. But their first half was just not up to snuff. They had that one chance through Simon Ron, which I thought half the crowd thought he scored, but it hit the mounting, which holds the nets together. But really, not enough production. They wanted a penalty, but what they thought was a foul on Junior Bromado, but that was a fantastic tackle, all ball. It doesn't get easy for Hansa. I would say they've got one of the tougher runs home. And look, they might be lucky in the sense that they're going to play teams that, for the most part, mightn't have anything to play for. Regardless, not easy. St. Pauli on Friday night is going to be a really tough game. And they're really going to have to bring it. Then they've got Karlsruhe at home, and Karlsruhe have shown time and time again what a good team they are. Schalke, they would have much rather that game be played at the Ostseestadion, even though Schalke did win that game back on match day 16. And then Paderborn at home. But they might be toast, or they might know that their fate is the relegation playoff. We don't know. So tough game all round. A lot to develop. And it's just not going to get easier for Hansa. Let's talk about Kaiserslautern. They welcomed Wien Wiesbaden to the Fritz Walter Stadion. A fantastic crowd of 42,000, just over 42,000. Both teams knew they had to win this game, and neither team will be thrilled with the 1-1 draw in the end. Kaiserslautern opened the scoring. Filip Kolac got absolutely lit up as he headed the ball, but his header was true for the 1-0. And for a long time, you know, Wiesbaden were pressing. They pushed the issue. They had a really good phase of play. And funnily enough, it was against the grain when Kaiserslautern was sort of looking to get that second goal that they struck. And it was an excellent goal from Ivan Pretain from outside the box to beat the returning Julian Kral. And 1-1 is the result. It was, as you would expect, a relegation game. It was tough. It was physical. It, you know, 29 fouls says it all. You know, teams combined for 21 shots on goal. You know, I would say Kaiserslautern probably had the... I don't know. It was tricky. I think both teams had their chances. I would say probably one of the more unlikelier chances that Wiesbaden had, they managed to score off. Fantastic goal. You know, Pretain's had a fantastic season. He's got 11 goals this season. And if Wiesbaden were to go down, hypothetically, he'd be someone I think teams would look at, whether a team that was gaining promotion from the Dritte Liga or, you know, a lower end. I think maybe a Nürnberg could look at him. You know, there would be teams that would have to consider Pretain as a potential option should he be available, should things develop in that particular way. Both, like, it's tough because the draw helps no one, really. You know, it definitely doesn't help Kaiserslautern, who continue their winless run. And as things are developing, you know, I suppose the question that has to be asked is has Freedom Funkel really in this period improved Kaiserslautern? I would say no. Yes, he won that semi-final game, which was against Saarbrücken. But to me, he just feels like a name. Like, he's obviously got a lot of experience. He's coached many teams in German football. But it's really difficult to see really what the plan is, what they're trying to do. It just seems like a dead situation. It almost feels like a dead situation. And their run home is not easy. I can tell you now, they don't want to be playing Kiel or Hertha away from home, and yet they are. And they have two games against teams that are still very much in the battle. Magdeburg, that top game we spoke about just before, but they end the season with Braunschweig coming to town. Now, that could be a game which, you know, both teams need to win to survive, or at the very least make the playoff. I would say Braunschweig, who we're going to talk about in a second, probably not in the same conversation anymore, for now at least. And you know, the picture develops next week and it might be completely different. But it just feels as if Lautner are on this massive downhill spiral when it doesn't really seem like it's going to end. Similar to Wiesbaden, though, I mean, look, great response from going a goal down. You know, they had some really good flashes in the second half. I definitely thought the team looked a lot better after halftime. Structurally, with playing more of a two-up-top system, moving to three at the back. I think they looked a little bit more comfortable in that situation. And we'll see how it develops for them. Obviously not out of the woods, sitting in 15th, a point ahead of Hansa. I guess the only thing that you would feel really beneficial about is that the goal difference situation, if it came down to them or a Hansa or Rostock or a Kaiserslautern, they have a much superior goal difference because of their defensive abilities and the fact that they've only given up 41 goals this season, much like Braunschweig, which in most cases, you know, they've got essentially like a top half defense, but they just they lack the offensive production. 32 goals, which is equal third worst in the league, and it's really hard. Like, you can have all the defensive structure in the world, but if you can't score goals, it becomes really difficult. And, you know, Pretorius has 11 of the 32 for the season, and it becomes really critical when you fall behind. So for them to actually get an equalising goal was quite a massive thing for them. But, yeah, the run home is tricky as well. Fürth and then Kiel at home, Braunschweig, and then home to St. Pauli. And St. Pauli might still have something to play for because they've got the league on the line. So, yeah, it's not over yet for them. They're not in the greatest position. They're in position A, if you want, being that they're the last team safe. But things can change really quickly in this league, and we've seen that as the season has progressed. Let's talk about Braunschweig and Osnabrück. Eintracht Braunschweig made the journey to the Bremerbrücke on Saturday. Massive game for both teams. You know, if Osnabrück were to win, it would put them within 3 points of Kaiserslautern and very much back in the hunt. But, you know, and Braunschweig, should they win, good things happen. It would put them a game clear of Rostock in that relegation battle for the playoff spot. And job done for Braunschweig. 3-0 your final. Goals from Anton Doncor, a brilliant counter-attacking goal from Ryan Philippe, and Johan Gomez getting his third goal of the season. And watching the game, there was always a feeling that if Braunschweig score first, it's going to be really hard for Osnabrück. We've said it over the last few weeks. We've said it since basically Schöning era football. If they score first, it's really hard to beat them. It's really difficult to beat them because they're going to sit in a deep block and they've got the pace, they've got the fast guys. But also, like, I would say the one thing that impressed me in this game is the quality of shots they were able to get. You know, 9 of their 10 shots on goal were inside the box. It's really hard to defend those, by the way. When, you know, 3 of the 9 are ending up in goals. And I think it made things worse for Osnabrück because they had a penalty late in the game and you want to take something out of the game, but Kwasi Reid missed the target. Granted, it would have been a consolation goal, but it really summed it up in what was a wet and miserable day at the Bremerbrücke. It's going to be hard. I think we've known this for a long time. We've flirted with the idea of, well, maybe they could. But they're just so hot and cold at the moment. They'll go on a run, then they'll go on a worse run, and they'll get back to the good run look, it's just unfortunate for them because you know that they're putting in the work rate, but they're just not good enough. I think it just comes out to that simple. And it's a shame because they were wearing that really lovely anniversary kit with the old school logo, and that was very, very nice. It doesn't mean anything. You know, kits don't win new games. So it's, yeah, with 4 to go, needing to maximize points. Yeah, I think we can put a line through Osnabrück officially. You know, they got Magdeburg on the weekend. If they win and we enter the hypothetical territory, teams in the bottom half lose, in the bottom six lose, then it's game on again. Then it's game on again. But I have to win. So, because their last three games are brutal. Schalke, at St. Pauli, and Hertha. They could spring a surprise. Like, they could beat Schalke at home. You know, Hertha are a bit hit and miss. But that game might not mean anything come match day 34. So this Magdeburg game is so huge for them. Like, they have to win. Like, there's no... A point will be enough. 3 points. That's all they need. They need 3 points. Braunschweig, on the other hand, with that win, moves them to 14th. A game clear of Hansa, as we mentioned before. Important. Very important result for them. Because the games are... Look, the big one is against Hamburg. And having watched Hamburg feel sort of mentally destroyed, they will absolutely feel like they're a chance against Haasfeld. And they defend a lot better than Magdeburg would or have done this season. So if they can score first, they will make a very tough game of it for Haasfeld. Then they've got Fürth, Wiesbaden and Kaiserslautern. So they've got two teams. They end the season against two teams that are fighting the fight as well. So lots to play for Daniel Schoening's side. Let's take our final break. And on the other side, we'll discuss the final three games starting at the Kaiserlinde. It's Elversberg against Schalke. On the back of their victory against Nürnberg last time out, Schalke were hoping to do something they haven't done very often this season, which was win away from home. They made the journey to Elversberg on Friday night, what seemed to be a really interesting encounter for both teams. A game that was really up and down for a lot of the game. Both teams had their chances, but it was a really good set piece from Elversberg that opened the scoring. Yannick Rockholt finding defender Florian Lejeune-Cour, and the Frenchman scoring his first goal in the Zweite Bundesliga. Elversberg definitely looked better heading into the break, and they had several chances. And one thing they were very good at in this game was exposing the flaws of Schalke, which is in the midfield, in transition, and in defence. They did it very, very well throughout this game. And I thought Paul Varner in particular was quite good. He was able to get into the half spaces, getting behind the defence. Same with Rockhill. I think those two were really good in this game. It did feel, though, that they were missing Lucas Schnellbacher. It certainly, Dominic Martinovic was the man leading the line in this game for a good chunk, and then they went with Wahad Fahir. But it just didn't seem like they had the same connection in the final third. And look, you know, Schalke, who have struggled away from home this season, really needing a result. And look, I was surprised with the team that they selected, and they didn't go with the same starting 11 that beat Nürnberg. Fine, bring in Ron Schallenberg, but I thought Seguin was better in that sort of singular defensive midfield pivot. So they shifted him out right. They put Kabadai up top with Simon Terodde, and dropping, and then they brought Brandon Soppy in at right back, and I thought Soppy was probably a little bit underdone. I mean, he played 75 minutes, just didn't look 100% fit for mine. But I guess if he's available, you play him. He's been their best right back this season, and he's been here for, you know, only a few months. So fair enough. They made a change at the break. Mürken came off. They switched. They brought Ovrian to play back. To play at left back and moved Kabadai back. They put him to left midfield with Keke Top coming on, and Top would get the goal in the end. It was a nice simple tap in, Kenan Karaman with a great ball into the box, and Top making the impact off the bench. And 1-1 is your final for Elversberg. We say the magic number is 38. That win last week was quite big for them. So 40 points with four to go. They're three games clear of Hansa Rostock. I'm willing to say they're safe. Unless something drastically happens where all the teams at the bottom pick up 10 points in their next four games, which is probably not going to happen. It's been a good season for them. A really good learning experience. Not always had it their own way, as you would expect. But out of the promoted teams, they've been the one that's adjusted to the Zweite Bundesliga best. Their football certainly proved to be sustainable. I think defensively is the one area they need to work on, whether they can improve. But they've got some impressive young players. They've made some very smart signings, especially on loan. I think getting Paul Varner the opportunity to show his ability was a great move, and he's really come on leaps and bounds. So that's been really impressive. And, you know, I think they can enjoy the next four games knowing that they'll be here next season. Paderborn away, Hertha at home, and damn emails. Nürnberg and then Karlsruhe. So I would say they're in a position where they can enjoy the rest of the season, and it's all good news. For Schalke, they've got some massive games coming up. Their next three are really important. Look, they're in a good position as it stands. They are unbeaten in the last three. But as we've said, things can change really quickly in this division. So they're not out of the woods just yet, but they are in a better position than they were a few weeks ago. So, yeah, we'll have to wait and see what happens with them. That Fortuna game is massive. It's the last time you'll see them on the world feed. But more importantly, a big opportunity. I know there'll be several fan bases that'll be hopeful that they can beat Dusseldorf. But, yeah, they've certainly shown to be a lot more difficult to play against in front of that massive crowd, which we're expecting, again, more than 60,000 in Gelsenkirchen. They end the season at Osnabrück, Hansa Rostock, and then Greuther Fürth. Let's quickly make our way to Nürnberg. Nürnberg hosted Paderborn. Nürnberg have lost three of the last four games against the Paderborn team, who, mathematically speaking, were not out of it. There was still a rarity that they could get relegated. But the mathematicians said that it was still possible. So if they were to get a win in Nürnberg, they would get off the hook. And they would do that. And it was such a strange game, this one. So they win 2-0. Adriano Grimaldi and then a set piece goal from Vissar Muslu was enough. But Nürnberg scored three times in this game. So they had the offside goal against Okanuki, which was really tight. I'm not so sure. The pictures, it's on an angle. It's not really, it's super tight. It's for me, I'm not so sure. The second one was they had a penalty. Chan Ozun had scored the penalty, but it was a double touch. So he kicked it into the instep foot, supposedly. The angle they showed, again, not clear that it happened, but regardless, it was given. The goal was taken away. So in both those instances, it would have been 1-1. And then they conceded the Muslu goal. And then they had another goal, which I think it was Anderson. And they were offside in the build-up. And a lot of question marks around Nürnberg, who are all... The sort of the talk now is that they're very much in the relegation battle. I mean, it can all change if they are able to win. And there's talk about Dieter Hecking as a sporting director. It's like, he's been there a while. And I think at some point, there has to be an acknowledgement that whatever this squad is supposed to be, it doesn't work. There's no clear plan. You've got a coach who can't play the way he wants them to play because the personnel doesn't fit this system. And a lot of that has to come down with transfers. You know, I like Sebastian Anderson, just not on this team. He doesn't really fit with the kind of number nine that they're looking for. He would be good on several other teams in the division. It's just not this one. They're going to lose Chan Ozun, and as great as he is, such a talent, obviously his defensive work sometimes is awareness, can let him down. But he's great on the ball. I mean, that pass he made for the Okanuki non-goal in the end was brilliant. It was a super pass. And only, it's... His individual quality was really good in this game, but... It doesn't matter because they lose. And now they're in a situation where the next four games are massive. And they're not easy games either. Karlsruhe, Fortuna Düsseldorf, Elversberg and Hamburg. Now, I personally don't believe they're going to be in the playoff spot. I think they're fine. I think they'll be fine in the end. They will take a point somewhere, a point or two, and it'll be all good. But this is deeply concerning because they were in a position of comfort for so long this season. And now, they're... excuse me. Looking over their shoulders in worrisome, which is fair enough. You can totally understand why they would feel concerned because now, the teams below them are picking up points and, the gap between them and the relegation zone is... still 6 points, but it could close quickly and all that pressure, all that intensity, and all the drama that they had to deal with last season is back again. They're a better team offensively, but a lot of that has to do with Can Özcan, who scored 15 of their 38 goals this season. And with that, you just can't sustain it. It's not a sustainable model. You look at like Bayer Leverkusen, for example, like how they... have a ton of different goal scorers. St. Pauli's the same. Multiple sources. Kiel also. They don't have one pure goal getter. They've got multiple goal getters at any time. And it makes a significant difference. And this team is one that, without Özcan's goals, they might be playing third division football next season. And that in itself would be a story. Much like several other teams. Let's go to our final game of match day 30. It brings us to Karlsruhe and Hertha BSC. Two teams that looking to end the season the right way. A big opportunity for both. We know how good both teams have been this season, especially Karlsruhe. Karlsruhe had a great season. A sneaky good season for Hertha in the end. I think if you were to say they could finish mid-table... the upper echelon of mid-table, you'd be pretty happy. But look, a really interesting game in the end. 3-2 was the final in this fan friendship game. There was a period where there was no chanting. There was two members, I think, in the Karlsruhe home block who needed medical attention. So hopefully those two individuals are okay. I haven't read or heard anything yet. So at the time of recording, so hopefully those two individuals are okay. Really good game in the end for Karlsruhe. They win 3-2. Goals from Marco Tita. Igor Matonovic, who now has a baker's dozen, 13 goals. And Marvin Vanitsek for Hertha, the goal scorer, was a brace for Haris Tabakovic, who has 21 goals this season. First one was assisted by Fabian Reza. The second one was a penalty. It looks like the Torjäger Cannon is heading to the capital, and for a first season in Bundesliga 2 for Matonovic, not Matonovic, for Tabakovic, it's been a fantastic return. The only problem is that, they've dropped games when they probably shouldn't have. And, 62 goals this season. So he has 21 of them, so just around a third of the goals for Hertha. A really good return for him, personally. And maybe there'll be clubs that come after him, I'm not so sure. Maybe he wants to stay with Hertha. But it's another one of those classic games. They were in it for a good chunk of it. But they conceded that goal just before the break. The Matonovic goal and the Vanitsek goal... which, you felt kind of killed them a bit. But, Hertha had their passages. I thought, the usual suspect, Fabian Reese, was really good. But just not enough went with them.
You know, I think that's the story of the season for Hertha as a whole, is that, you know, it's really one player who's carrying the load and the rest are just not willing to fight for it as much. Especially in, especially away from home. Like, we use a term in AFL footy called downhill skiing. And when a team plays at a certain venue and they love to go forward, everyone's part of the wave. And it's all good. And they've got a decent record. I know they're not like, it's not the best home record in the league, but it is still a formidable place to play. But away from home, they've shown to be a bit vulnerable, and not everyone seems to be up for the fight. Obviously, it didn't help that Tiago Ernst had a little bit of a difficult day at the office in goal. So overall, there's a lot to discuss. We said it last week, and we can carry on and monologue all the way through it. But for Hertha, it's one of those teams where what they do in the summer will determine if this 2 to 3 year project of returning to the Bundesliga will be successful. Will it be par data? I don't know. And to be honest, I probably would go in a different direction, but that's just me. Who would be the manager? I'm not so sure. But they definitely need to... this summer is massive for them. So they've got a lot to think about going forward. They do have a lot to enjoy heading into the final few games. They've got Hanover, which is the last time we'll see them on the world feed. Away days at Elversberg, a home game against Kaiserslautern, and Osnabrück away ends the season. For Karlsruhe, they move up to fifth. They move up to fifth and are in a very good position to end the season on a high. I wonder what the next season, because Igor Matanovic goes back to Frankfurt. You know, will Frankfurt actually play him? Will he be sold on somewhere? I don't know. But he's obviously had a really good season. 13 goals for him. But yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of question marks, because if they can keep the core, they could be a chance of going up next season. I think Eichner's a really good coach, and, you know, he's shown that after a pretty tricky start to the season, his ability to sort of character build and turn the tide has been really impressive. I think we're going to have a very interesting off-season in Baden-Württemberg for Karlsruhe, what they do. And the squad is pretty old, on the older side of things. So if they can blood in some young players, there'll probably be a few loans here and there. I actually would think there's going to be a kid that plays for Bayern. That's going to be at Bayern next season, who I think could be a really cool get. And I hope that Bayern do the right thing by Nestori Irinkunda and send him on loan. And hopefully a loan place like a Karlsruhe or an Elversberg. I know they've got that technical partnership with Unterhaching, which will allow them to send several of their U23 players on loan. I would like to see him play Zweite Bundesliga football next season, but that's just a personal opinion. That's it for us. I know that a lot of these episodes have been basically me monologuing, and it's not been particularly easy, especially with even though I'm in the better time zone. Usually the Mondays I've been traveling to another city, and yeah, so it's been a little bit tricky to make this work, but if there is a will, there is a way. Thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. We'll be back next week. I think when the episode comes out next week, I will be in the air. So there's food for thought. But yeah, thanks for listening. Have a fantastic week. Enjoy the Zweite Bundesliga match day 31, and we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.